32. Our Father in Hell.
Proud ship, proud spirit, I see what you have become. Even from this great distance, my embattled mind-sight can see what his excess has made of you. I can perceive the truth of it, whole and entire and terrible, for my mind is not shuttered by deceit like the brave sentinel souls who travel with my lord and master. I want to help him. I want to stand alongside my beloved friend, the master of mankind, and aid him in his fight. But I can't. All I can do is watch, from my excruciating perch on the golden throne far away. Horus Lupercal is allowing me to witness this. I can smell his cruelty. He hopes the sight of it will break my concentration, so I lose control of the throne. I will not. I will not. But I cannot help but look, and what I see is a whole agony in itself. I see a hell pit, a realm of horror that my lord's first found has wrought, mistaking it for heaven. Perhaps the great Lupercal is now so far gone this seems like a heaven to him. His gods, gods that are not gods, have lied to him. The lies are so very convincing. Fleetingly, they fool even my master. I see him forced to blink and look away as he advances, to shake off the visions of gold and lustrous pearl, the pure white light that bathes everything in a glow like sunlight on fresh snow. It reminds him of the great Himalayan peaks, silent and unspoiled when first he climbed them, lifetimes ago, and stood and breathed the empty cold, and looked upon the white dazzle of the top of the world, and decided that this would be where he would raise my city. It was a place that knew eternity. This place knows it too. This poor proud ship is a ship no longer. The four, the false four, have made it a bridge to infinity, matter fused with unmatter, a pathway from sane reality to insane ether. The entire solar realm is subsiding into the warp, and the vengeful spirit is the focus, the primary pathway between realms. I see that my master, for all his great power, is finding it hard to concentrate and hold on to the truth. The compounding lies of heaven and hell are so very convincing. It is all too easy to become lost in private fantasies born of doubt, or secret fear, or burning need. The warp tempts us all. I fear for all who embarked on this assault with him, Constantine, Sanguinius, Rogel, wherever they are. They may already be lost to delusions manufactured to exploit their smallest flaws. My master's companions, the pitiful remains of the Heteron Company, for all their preternatural gifts, are entirely beguiled by the lies. They see heavens of their own, madly beautiful or beautifully mad. Warden Zadophus sees an Elysian temple of glass and gold leaf, sunlight beaming from a pale dome. Custodes Phrastus beholds a serene field of glory, surrounded by alabaster pillars under a bright noon sky. Prefect Andolen perceives the halls and galleries of a golden palace, lined with Auromite effigies of heroes, paved with silk-sheen marble. The others, too. It's hard to track. Their thoughts, usually so steeled and focused, are slippery with amazement and wonder. They see around them the glory of the inner sanctum, the palace they have guarded their whole lives, replicated in every detail, but magnified in scale and richness 1,000 times, more lavish than any citadel their master ever built. The proconsul Caecaltus, he that I marked with my sigil, the company advances along the gilded walk, yet it is 10 times broader and 100 longer, and gleams beneath a sky more pure than any terror has ever known. To Caredo, it is the Hall of Worthies, flanked by statues and roofed in crystal, which marks the final western approach to the Silver Door. To Ravengast, This is the Chryselephantine Yulongji passageway, which leads to the cloisters of the Imperial Aditum. Lies! All lies. They are all so amazed at the Radiant Kingdom, they see not the menace suffusing every inch of the place at every hand. Phrastus, pausing to marvel, sinks slowly into the golden floor, unaware of his descent as he vanishes from view. Braxius, lost in rapture, disappears quite suddenly. I think the golden statues took him, yet they are quite still, their frozen gazes turned away innocently. Andalen stops and leans back against an engraved Auramite wall in contemplation. The wall begins to pull him in without a ripple, as though he is being gently lured into molten gold. I see this happening. My mouth moves, silently screaming. I want to call out, but they cannot hear me. They do not see what I see. The nightmare black, the rot, the filth, the truth that briefly replaces the palatial glory every time I blink. I see my master turn and yell Andalen's name. Andalen stirs and smiles to see his lord. He is half sunk in the wall. There is no seam or line where the gold of his plate ends and the wall begins. My master grabs his hand and tries to pull him free. He sinks further.
Andalen! Awake!
I hear my master cry. Andalen blinks, confused, then alarmed, slowly realizing his plight. My master cannot pull him free. He won't let go. He stakes his sword in the deck and with his free hand grips the limb of a vast aureate statue nearby to anchor himself. He hauls, yet still Andalen won't come loose. The statue feels cold to my master's touch, even through his gauntlet. The statue is one from the Hall of Worthies. It depicts one of the Primarch's sons. I don't know which one. My master grips the leg so hard the gold deforms, ruining the sculptor's perfect line of thigh and knee. I see the crafted shape of harness and plate, the laurels on the head, the scepter held high in the left hand, the loop of frayed red twine tied around the fingers of the right hand.
Awake!
My master roars. He will not let the lies consume them. Straining to pull Andalen clear, he unleashes his will to drive the radiant cloud of falsehood from their brains.
Awake, please! Know yourselves. Wake from this stupor, or be forever fallen.
They wake. Some of them, at least. Others are too far gone. They wake, by his will alone, and see the ship as I see it. They see the darkness and the decay, the cancerous steel of the deck, the diseased bulkheads. They see their master gripping a half-broken stanchion as he tries to haul Andalen from an oozing wall of meat that is sucking him in like quicksand. Andalen is screaming. The most terrible sound in creation, to hear a custodian cry out in fear. Others start forward to help their lord. Zadaphus, Caredo, Caecaltus. But all they drag free is Andalen's arm, torn off and blurting blood. Frustrated that their lies have been exposed, the spirits of the ship become vengeful. They sweep in from all sides, wide-mawed and roaring from the darkness, snatching men off their feet even as they turn in confusion. I see what the cursed first found is trying to do, or rather, I see what the four that rule him are trying to do. This is them at work, the predators in the long grass. All four have deployed their gifts here, to stop my lord, because they fear him. They are targeting the Heteron custodians because they dread the killing power each one represents. They are trying to pick them off one by one, through violence or madness, until my master is forced to stand alone. Further, they are trying to weaken my lord and dilute his power. The custodies were built to protect him, but the four have turned them into a burden, forcing him to protect them. For only if he shares his will and mindsight with them, diminishing his own power, can he keep them alive and alert. Once more the insidious cruelty of the warp is demonstrated to me. It fights not fairly if it can fight with cunning. It wants no match with my lord and his warriors on an equal footing, for it has no doubt as to who would win that. It turned my lord's men against him when he first arrived. Now it turns them into an encumbrance. It knows and mocks his love for each of them, and it knows he will not see them wasted and destroyed. It obliges him to mete out his strength to them, so they can at least see the truth and fight it. It seeks to weaken my great lord and wear him down, until he is at last alone and vulnerable. These are the treacherous blood games it wishes to play. Well, my lord and master of mankind has some skill in such games. The spirit, once proud ship, is but a ruin, no more than a derelict, decayed tomb, like the benighted space hulks we have sometimes found drifting and lost between stars. The warp has eaten it away, and where it has not rotted and disfigured, it has transmuted and diseased. The decks are scarred and dislocated, the walls rusted and soiled. In places, it has split open, so that the hull gapes wide into the void. But it is not the hard vacuum of near Terran space that glares back in, nor are they familiar constellations that I see glinting through the torn and collapsed hull skin. The vengeful spirit, just like the rest of the immense traitor fleet, just like Terra itself and the entire solar realm, is half sunk in the immaterium, much as poor Andalan was half sunk in the wall. What surrounds my lord now, what permeates his first found's flagship, is the leeching, cankered void mist of the Empyrean, flooding into real space to claim it as its own. This increasing flux is what pollutes Terra, and deforms it, and reduces it, and mangles spatial dimensions, and revokes time, and allows the never-born and dead to walk. Horus's ship has not been spared the dissolving touch of chaos it has carried to the throne world and unleashed. You have brought the Emperor face to face with chaos first found, closer than when he sat upon the throne or walked the shrieking halls of the Webway, perhaps closer even than when he last faced the Four and took their fire from them on Moloch. You have brought chaos to his very door and forced him to look it in the eye. Do not, then, expect him not to use it. I see him look down at his hands. They are sheathed in Auramite, because it is almost quantum inert, and thus most efficacious in the manipulation of immaterial forces. Bare skin is better. This much he knows. He tears his right gauntlet off, hangs it from his harness, and seizes the immaterium with bare hand and a bared mind. It is scalding and alive with anger, but my lord is no longer constrained by the constant duties of the throne. That is my burden now. There is no time. There are no clocks. There is no pain. My master hears only the crackle of the warp. I watch as he harnesses that sound and uses it as a focus, a drishti, to regulate his work. The immaterial presses at him. It seeks to overwhelm and drain him, but he understands its fire. It is the same fire he stole from the Four Annihilators and used to keep them at bay. The same fire he has wielded for centuries to drive them back whenever they have come too close. They flinched then from their own fire. They flinch now. You have forced this confrontation first found. You have brought my lord into a realm of chaos to face you. Did you think that would weaken him and grind him down? How can he grow weak when there is limitless power around him to draw upon? You do not put out a fire by throwing fuel upon it. He draws upon your flames. Over the millennia, he has worn many masks, each suitable to the task at hand. His mind, his greatest gift, allows him flexibility in such things. Now you see him at his truest aspect, as terrible as he can be when terror is the only recourse. He is Ordo Ab Kaio. He is Lux in Tenebris. The Emperor lights up your pitiful, wretched ruin of a ship. He burns back your perfidious darkness. He empowers his ailing companions and rekindles their courage. He shares his searing mindsight with them, banishing the false heavens and murderous paradises you conjured to drown them. He sharpens their senses and the edges of their blades. He fires the cryptochromes in their eyes, the retinal proteins he wove into their construction that lets them read magnetic fields and allows them to see the actual physical structure of this place behind the congealing lies and illusions. He boosts their data-depleted senses and banishes the cognitive dissonance created by the isotopic space around them. Despite the inhuman pain that racks every atom of my body, I rejoice at the sight of it. Refreshed, renewed, the custodians form up around my lord. Zadophus, Caredo, Caecaltus, Torrid, Ravengast, Membo, Zagros, the last of the few. They see through your nacrous dreams first found, to the spoil-heap desolation they veil, the botched pipes and curdled waste, the fibrous decks seethed with a filigree of worm tracks, the dripping ceilings and sloughed wall panels, the dangling cables and broken fittings, the litter of bones and the oozing stacks of skulls. Your darkness billows back like squid ink. The gathering Neverborn, some quite the most enormous of their ilk I have ever glimpsed, scream mirthlessly at my lord's baleful fire, which scorches their minds. They surge forward. Golden blades meet them. The stench of their blood and bursting organs infects the air, the Nidor reek of their meat and fat burning as power blades cut through it. But it cannot overwhelm the Osmogenesia, that pure odour of sanctity that surrounds my lord and his companions. They drive forward, smashing through the demon's energumenical mass, possessed by will and power and abreactive fire. The decks shudder as infamous beasts collapse and die, or stagger, howling, back into the shadows, trailing blood or mauled limbs. Horned things, tusked things, insectile horrors come apart under raining blows and roaring shells, deliquescing into slicks of ithocrous sludge or spattering the walls and floors with sizzling ianthine blood. My master begins his vastation, advancing blow by blow and death by death into the dark heart of your lair, searing away the evils that you throw at him, edging ever closer to your abditory, your inner sanctum. Your attempts to stop your father have forced his hand, obliging him to become stronger, to reject notions of mercy, to adopt the aspect I hoped he would never have to wear. I am reluctant to admit it, but this pleases me. I am almost delighted to have lived just long enough to see his ultimate fury unleashed. The things he slays, dead, undead, or neverborn, incinerate in outrage at the power he is wielding. They see him for what he is first found. They see him in the aspect you have forced him to assume. Emperor, master of mankind, thanatizer of demons, annihilator of annihilators, bearer of stolen fire, deathbringer to the false and pitiful four. He is here, first found. In rage, in extremity, in theandric fury, he is here, and he is coming for you, with all of the vengeance and malice you are owed. No more restraint. His reluctance is gone. He will take great pleasure in obliterating you, for I hear his mind ringing through the warp.
I am here, Horus Lupercal, and for you I am the end and the death.